This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, coming to you from Tan Talk Radio Network studio here in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Okay, well, at the bottom of the hour, I have a really great I love books where I learn something. I love books that take me back to some place that I haven't been and where I really learn something. And so I am really thrilled that at the bottom of the hour, I'm going to be talking to James Glover about Picolotta Road. It is a fascinating book. It's a cowboy book. I love cowboy books. It's funny that this came to me just at the right time because I was really looking for something different. And this book is quite amazing. It is set here in, the majority of the book is set right here in Florida and St. Augustine, and it tells so much of the history of Florida that I didn't know, and I really enjoyed just immersing myself in the history of Florida. And so I'm really excited that James Glover will be with us at the bottom of the hour. But first, I want to, you know, it's so funny. It's coming up to the 5th anniversary of Joy on Paper, and this has been, you know, such a thrill for me. One of the things that I've been doing for the past few years is every week I buy a lottery ticket. Specifically, I buy one for my family, and then I buy one for the show, because I would so love to win a nice bet jackpot so that I could option some of the books that I have just fallen in love with over these past few years. As you know, I was a script writer. So when I get a book and I see it as a film in my head, it really drives me crazy that I can't start writing the script and then produce the film. And so that's why I buy this special lottery ticket, with the hope that I would be able to make enough money so that I could option the books that I really, really love. Meanwhile, I'm trying to get links to Hollywood, and I have a few threads out there, but it's difficult to get through to them because they really need some new product, and I have some, some of the books that I have read over the past 5 years and some of the authors I have met, their books absolutely should be on film. Now, of course, there are famous, I've talked to a lot of famous people, and they don't have, well, even famous people have problems getting their books optioned. Sometimes they go into turnaround over in Hollywood, but at least they they get picked up and they make money from the option. I don't know how many times now Amor Towles, a gentleman in Moscow, must have been optioned at least twice now because they've put off the production of it. And it's I'm sort of looking forward to it. I'm not sure that I'm looking forward to seeing the film. Sometimes I am. Sometimes I really want to see it. And then sometimes I'm so afraid that they're going to ruin it because A Gentleman in Moscow is one of those books that I know so well, and so I'm a little worried about that. But there are books that I would like to do, and I think that I would do them the right way. One of them is Jill Block's Parallel Lines, The Truth About Parallel Lines. I read that book, and as I'm reading it, I suddenly realized I'm not reading this book. The words are there, but it was a film in my head, and even today, when I sometimes see something about New York City, the whole film comes back to my head. And so I would love to option that one. I would love to option Peter Riva's books about Africa. He has three in the series now. They are absolutely wonderful. And I would, they should be streaming video. They are just terrific. And then you know, I like a little bit quirky. I like things so often, and I'm really, I don't know what they're doing with all, they're spending a lot of money on streaming video, but a lot of the product, really, I'm telling you, is not good. It's not original. It's not clever. It's not smart. But one of I just love this series, and it reminded me of something very important that happened here at Joy on Paper, and that is Laura Resnick's series. They're called Esther Diamond series, and Laura Resnick and her father came on the program. Now, her father recently passed away, and he was a good friend to Joy on Paper. He was one of my first guests. Mike Resnick was a 5-time Hugo Award winner. He won Nebula Awards. He was the editor for Jim Beam's Universe, which was a fantastic thing that where writers could get to, sci-fi writers could get a chance to get their work done. And he also created and edited Galaxy Edge magazine, which opened up the world to so many authors of sci-fi. They could submit their short stories there, and they published these stories, and it was the start for many, many authors. As a matter of fact, it's funny, I had not read Mike Resnick's work until one of my guests, Carolyn Hart, was on, and of course I read Carolyn Hart, you know, all of her books, and in one of her books, one of her Death and Demand series, she mentioned Mike Resnick. Now, this is one of the reasons I love Carolyn Hart. It, you know, this program is, I look at it as a tapestry. It's the basic tapestry is the 10,000 books that I have read since I was 2 years old. So I have all these books, all these threads, but then there's these magical threads, colorful threads that come in and that are woven into the pattern. One of them is Carolyn Hart. She was one of my first guests, and in her books, she always promotes other authors because her book are set in a bookstore, so it gives her an opportunity to talk about books that she loves to promote other authors. One of the authors she promoted is Mike Resnick, and he had written a few mysteries, and so I got involved with all of his sci-fi books. And of course, this was his main claim to fame, because he was really well known in the sci-fi community. He took part in a lot of the events in the sci-fi community, and his books are just fantastic. One of them is the Kirin Yaga, which is a wonderful book, and Santiago, A Myth of the Far Future, is again one of the great sci-fi books. So, you know, I was so sad to hear about his passing, because over the years, he was on the program quite a few times, and I had the joy of having him on the program with his daughter. And so it was so much fun to have both Mike and Laura on to talk about writing and to talk about their books. And as a matter of fact, I had a special relationship with Mike, because when he was on my program the first time, I mentioned to him that I got my name, Patsy, as you all hear when I start the program, I say Patsy with a Z, P-A-T-Z-I. Well, I got that name because of Jimmy Hoffa. When I was a baby, I sat on Jimmy Hoffa's knee, and he would say Patsy, and that's what he would call me. And so that just stuck with me, and I've always thought of myself as Patsy with a Z. And so it was fun. He, after the program, a few days later, he sent me an email. He said, well, I think this is a story just for you. And, you know, as all writers do, they write stories about different things and different possibilities. And he wrote a little piece about Jimmy Hoffa. And it's a really cute story. Now, he had he hadn't published it. There was really no place to publish a little short story about Jimmy Hoffa. It was just a little idea he had. And so he sent it to me and he said, you know, I think you'll really enjoy this. And I did. And because it's a funny story about Jimmy Hoffa with a different take on it. And of course, I remember Jimmy Hoffa, which, you know, I was very little, but I remember how he smelled. I remember how he smelled. I remember that he had a nice cologne, and he had very soft cheeks. He was very nice. For anyone who knew Jimmy Hoffa, he didn't smoke, he didn't drink, and for all of the things that they write about him, from my point of view, he was absolutely wonderful. And he used to give me 50-cent pieces. He had this thing that he'd say to me, 2 bits, 4 bits, 6 bits, a dollar. If you don't give me a hug, I'm going to holler. So over the years, he'd give me 50-cent pieces. And later on, as I got older, he gave me, $18 sometimes for high. But the wonderful thing is I got to know him. So I had Laura Resnick on the program, I wanted to do something special for her. So Rita Moreau did this promo for her book, and we're going to play that now. And then because I want to help her and, of course, her father. So we're going to play the promo that Rita Moreau did for The Doppelgangster. And then I'll come back and talk a little bit more about this wonderful series by Laura Resnick.
This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest book buzz. And A Doppelgangster is the exciting science fiction and fantasy second novel of the Esther Diamond series by Laura Resnick. Here's the buzz. Esther Diamond, a New York actress, is resting between roles by working as a singing waitress at a Manhattan mob restaurant because, well, wise guys tip well. Then duplicated gangsters appear, bullets start flying, and it's up to Esther and her friend Max the Magician to fight evil by stopping the gang war before it starts killing the wrong people. And if she has time, maybe Esther can actually keep a hot date with her hunky detective friend Lopez, who doesn't believe in magic yet. Laura Resnick introduces a colorful cast of gangsters and their associates as she spins a witty, fast-paced mystery around her convincingly self-absorbed chorus girl heroine. Unplug all your devices and settle down for a fast and funny read with Laura Resnick's Doppelgangster. This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper. Hey, for more of my suggestions on mysteries you should not miss, go to our webpage, www.radio-joyonpaper.com, and click on Book Buzz. That's radio-joy on paper. Rita Moreau, buzzing off for now.
Okay, well, you know, I want to thank Rita so much for doing these book buzzes that help to promote authors and to keep, you know, in this business, it is important to keep your name out there. And it's difficult for authors to find places to get their name out. Generally speaking, you get some coverage from the press and from the media on the day of a release of a book, and then that's it, and everybody forgets about you. But I don't want anyone to forget either about Mike Resnick, whose books are really great, and if you love sci-fi, please go and check him out on Amazon. You will find a book that you will love there. There's so many. Whether you love sci-fi, his mystery books are great, and he has a very, very funny series. It's not exactly politically correct, but it is hilarious. So you can keep these authors' works alive by reading them, because this is, you know, they work so hard all their lives to write, and sometimes, you know, books don't sort of have a shelf life. They just don't keep. But in the case of Mike Resnick's books, his books are terrific, and people will be reading them, you know, 100 years from now, and because he was always thinking about what would happen 100 years from now. So it'll be fascinating. And as I said, if I could, I would option Laura Resnick's wonderful series, Esther Diamond. It's witty. It's funny. The mysteries are clever. The characters are, you know, just well developed. There's a little bit of magic, a little bit of sexy humor. They're just delightful. And she has quite a few books in the series, and you can start at the beginning. You can start anywhere. One of my favorites is The Misfortune Cookie. I think that's somewhere like number 6 or 7 in her series. But she has a lot of books, and it's fun. And that's the wonderful thing about the internet, is that you can start a series at the beginning. And if you're looking for something unusual, try Esther Diamond by Laura Resnick. And it's available on Amazon, where everything seems to be available nowadays. You know, I'm going to take a commercial break, and then when we come back, we're going to get, we're just going to get right down to a real cowboy story, which is quite unusual, and you're going to love it. Okay, we'll be right back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my guest, James R. Glover. And this is so fantastic. I've always loved cowboy books. The reason is when I was a kid, we had a summer camp right on Lake Superior, and all the guys would read cowboy books and they would leave them behind, and I would always read them. So when I got this book, I was sort of transported back in time, and I think this is a terrific book. And my guest is James R. Glover, and the book is called The Picolato Road. Hi, James.
Hello, Patsy, and thank you for having me.
Wow. I tell you, this, as I said, you know, when I started this book, I read the first few pages, I stopped, I said, oh, this is going to be so much fun for me. Because you know, not a lot of girls read cowboy books, you know, but when I was a girl, as I said, because we had this fishing camp and all the guys would come up there and they would read and they'd always leave their books behind. And I was reading from the time I was two. So I started reading. I would read everything. And so when I got this book, I thought, this is amazing. The first few pages are so exciting and so descriptive. And I learned so much just in those first few pages. Let's take a step back and tell us how you've done such major historical research into this book.
Yes, it was several years of research. But obviously, I'm from the area that I wrote about, so I'm sort of writing what I know, but. The basic premise was to bring the classic Western character into what was the last Eastern frontier. And that was the objective to begin with, is to plant that individual into Florida. And that's not new. There's a genre that they call the cracker Western, which was very popular in the past several years. And I tried to build on that.
Well, you've done a beautiful, beautiful job. It reads so beautifully. It has such depth. And I think anybody who it should be like sold in hotels all along the way. Any tourist who comes here, you know, they don't know much about Florida. But this book is so informative. Of course, it's based there in St. Augustine, but it tells the basic story of Florida, which is so fascinating. And now, I've been to St. Augustine. I didn't know all of this history. And so it's just, I think you've done a real service here to Florida, to the state of Florida. The state of Florida should really... They should give this book out to people and say, read this book, because you'll have a new appreciation for Florida in general.
Well, it's really about not the Florida that you and I live in, but the Florida that existed before perhaps Mr. Flagler built his railroad.
Oh,
and
yeah.
it was a different world then. And that's where I wanted to take people to, because the Florida we see today is nothing like what it was.
Well, the name of the book is Picolata. Is that the right way to pronounce it, Picolata?
Yeah, that's the Picolata Road.
Well, I've been on that road, but it's not.
Okay.
It's
okay.
Not. Yeah, it's not the same today.
No.
No. It's like warehouse. I sort of vaguely remember it, but how did this story come to you? There you are. You know, you've gone back in time so beautifully, and you captured this period before the Civil War and throughout this period. What? Tell us, when did the idea come to you? Were you a boy and you were, you know, still playing outside, or how did it come to you?
Well, first of all, I have a love of history, and particularly Florida history brought to me early in school. In the eighth grade, I had a teacher, Mrs. Peterson, and Mrs. Peterson used to come to St. Augustine every year on vacation and actually stayed at the Ponce de Leon Hotel. And she was the one that kind of instilled this in me, and that's a credit to all teachers. Mrs. Peterson inspired me. Well, if I move forward, I developed while I was still in my other line of work in business, I developed an interest in writing. And I wanted to combine that love of history and writing, which is what I did. Then I had my daughter attended Baylor University, and I was out there and toured the Texas Ranger Museum out there. And that is where it really started. I wanted to see, you know, that classic Western character. What would he do in Florida? And the way the old Florida was. And that's when that was kind of the beginning of it. And then it morphed into other things. I wanted to. The old Florida frontier was actually predated the old West, and so therefore that character had to come pretty much just before the Civil War and during the Civil War to make that character fit in the time frame. And that was kind of the genesis of it.
Well, obviously, you've done quite a bit of research to get things so. you've created such a visual picture for us, right, with all the details.
That's the St. Augustine that I wish I could go back to, but I, you know, in studying it, that's the St. Augustine that was before, you know, before all of the tourists. And actually, it was a tourist town then, but it was a different type of tourist in that day and age.
Is this your first book?
Yes, ma'am. It is. It is my initial offering, and I'm working on my second one as we speak.
Well, I mean, it's incredible.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I don't know how many years it took you. I don't know what you did before, but you have a natural flair both for storytelling and just for just pure good writing. I mean, it is. I'm like, I'm reading it. I did a search. I didn't see you had another book, and I thought, well, how could somebody write this book and not have another book published? Because it is so, I think my biggest compliment to an author is it's solid.
No,
I'm comfortable. I'm reading it and I don't have to worry about anything, you know? I care so much about an author, I'll worry, this isn't right, this isn't. With you, it's like,
you're going to mess it up.
Yeah, I'm saying, wow. So tell us this, you know, tell us a story about Jesse. Tell us, you have created a character that I think will really resonate with readers.
Mm-hmm.
And the all the cast of characters, but what is it now? You know, obviously you're going to be doing a lot of promotion. I don't know if you've started going around yet. Have you done shows and all of that kind of stuff yet? What's your marketing?
We're gearing up for it. We're going to try to do some signings and. I've found that book clubs are a very interesting venue. That if you can get an entree into different book clubs, I'm working on that angle. I've found that to be an interesting. You're more personal with the people reading it, and I think that's going to be one thing I'm going to try to attack.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you were in business, so you're already familiar with marketing and all of that, which helps.
Right. It helps, but you, as an author, and you know this. You've been in this area so long that marketing is it is a time eater. You spend as much time in marketing as you do writing, and as a historical fiction writer, you spend as much time in research as writing. So it's a heavy task to take on.
It is, and it's something that many authors are not prepared,
exactly.
Especially the ones who have never been in business themselves. They don't understand that being an author in today's environment is just basically running a full-time business.
That's right.
It's not anymore where you even the ones who are with the big publishers. None of the big publishing houses do this kind of marketing anymore. You have to get out and do it. But you have enormous, enormous potential because I think there are many organizations you can get together with. But all the Civil War people who love Civil War things, all the people who love cowboy things, but you have to start... I don't know if you. I have not had a chance to see if you already done all the Facebook hashtags and all of that stuff. You've got a lot of work ahead of you, but
yes, I do.
I think you have enormous potential with this book, because, as I said, when I read it, I learned so much. I was so intrigued by the story. I wanted to know what was going to happen. I mean, you created Jesse, and that's always. Right from the first five pages, once we start caring about Jesse, once we just hook on to him, we want to follow through with the story. Now, tell us a little bit about some of the other characters around him and how you develop them.
Well, J- Jesse is obviously the main protagonist. There is another protagonist in there in Isabel Cox, who becomes Isabel Salazar. But Jesse is a person that is conflicted. He's had a very tough childhood, which makes him into the man that he is. But what I've tried to do is not make him the stoic Clint Eastwood or the typical cowboy. I want you to see inside what is making him, what is he going through as he struggles with who he is and what he does. And I think that makes him relatable. And I have to give credit to my critique group, who I've been a part of a group for 5 years now, and they are all women. I'm the only guy in the group, but they have pushed me to say I want to see what they're thinking, what they're feeling, and I appreciate that, and I've tried to build that in each of my characters. So it's really a story about friendship, relationships. There's romantic relationships in there, but there's also bonds between men and bonds between women in a friendship. And my other character, Silas Ward, is Jesse's best friend, who is really, as a good friend, is looking out for Jesse, and Jesse is looking out for him. And then Isabel has a friend in there, Maria, and they're both. In this Civil War turmoil that they're in, they have to take care of each other, because the Civil War actually changes the roles of men and women in subtle ways that we don't think about. But the war itself changes a lot of things, and particularly in the American South, and the roles of women and how men and women relate were changed during that war. So I've tried to factor all of those in subtle ways, not to beat people over the head about it, but try to factor those things in and build it into my characters.
Well, you have, and that the whole subject of loyalty is flows throughout the book, and mm-hmm. this is something that people care about. Who's going to be loyal? Are people going to be loyal to each other? Loyal to their own, you know, interests, or loyal to what they believe. And so you've woven that beautifully in there. Now, when mm-hmm. you start, as you said, now you worked with a critique group for quite a few years. So you've gone through a lot of revisions and changes.
Oh,
and
yes.
Yeah. Yes. And obviously you've gotten to a point where, as I said, it's one of those books that when I get a book that is an author's first published book, and it is so very perfect, I get so thrilled by it.
Oh, and thank you.
So when you were doing your research, yes. I know you're from St. Augustine, so right. you knew the area, but how did you find out everything about all this in the past? Because you really have some wonderful details there. And you walked, you've been to a lot of these areas.
Yes.
There.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. First of all, I belong to the St. Augustine Historical Society, and that's a great resource. They have a historical library that I have spent several hours in, long days. But I've also gone, you know, I've seen the Battle of Alesti, the reenactment of Alesti, going to the Fascio House where Jesse stays when he first comes to St. Augustine, the Dr. Peck House, the Castillo de San Marcos, all of those places I've tried to visit. And then on top of that, you have to read. I've read several books on Florida during that time and on St. Augustine. So there's 5 years worth of research as well as writing into this. And I've interviewed several people. I interviewed Dr. Keith Holland, who is the one who actually discovered the maple leaf in the St. John's River, and talked to him on a couple of occasions to get his take on how things would have played out. So, and as you write, you come upon instances where I need to know more about that. And the one thing I hate, or the one thing that I'm most afraid of, is getting one of those facts wrong. That keeps me awake at night. If I get one of the and you will, there's nothing you can do, but trying to be as accurate as possible, you will write and you will get into a situation with your character, and you will go, well, I'm going to have to stop here and go figure that out.
Yeah, because
find out about that.
Oh, because there will be somebody.
Yes, there are people out there that know more about things than I do.
Oh yeah, there are experts in this and that, and they find it and they immediately put up something on Amazon and say, well, he got that wrong. He got that wrong.
Yes.
But I didn't find anything.
Okay.
I didn't find anything wrong. And I think you've done a remarkable job. And I also got the sense as I'm reading the book that you just really enjoyed this. You know, when something is a work of love, when you find that joy of writing and the character is, it becomes part of you, doesn't it?
Yes, that's and I think you have to be a writer to understand that. But the character has actually come alive. You sit and you think about, well, what is he doing now? What is she doing now? And why is she doing that? It's not necessarily a conversation. You're not talking to yourself, but you are. You become. It sounds negative, but you become as obsessed with those characters as to what are they doing, what are they like, and why are they doing that. And another way, I guess you would call me a pantser, which is a writing term of people who are not outliners, but they typically write as the characters develop. And although I did outline this book in the beginning, I quickly found that the outline becomes useless because your characters will take you places that you didn't realize or that you didn't know where you were going when you started. And that's what makes them come alive, is they take a life of their own. And you have to follow them where they lead you, actually.
Well, there are so many details and a book, when you have these details that are just woven in there quietly, you don't make a big deal of them. Those are those details that make a book real. And little things about the guns, for example, how fast a Native American could shoot a bow and arrow. These kind of things.
Right.
What? Tell us about some of these things that you discovered about that period of time.
Some of it was from reading. A book that influenced me quite a bit on the beginning was Empire of the Summer Moon, which was about the Comanche Nation and the Comanche Empire in the Southwest, and how they controlled that area, and it was their, they were an important part of that history, and they are an amazing people. They were able to control the Spanish. They kept the Spanish, the Mexican, and the Americans at bay for decades before. And the weapon that plays an important part in that is the Walker Colt that plays a part in this story. So that was an influence on the early part. But the technical details, I actually went out and bought a reproduction Walker Colt to understand how how heavy the weapon is and how it handles and things. And so I try to get into the detail as much as possible by living it and seeing what it's like. One thing my wife laughs about is that I actually made acorn coffee, burnt acorn coffee, toasted acorns. I went out in the yard and picked up several off the ground, went in, ground them up, parched them, and made this coffee that they have to drink because there isn't real coffee. And I try to understand what my characters are going through by doing some of the things they have to do.
Well, I could tell from the minute I was reading about the gun, I said, well, he has one, because I felt that no one could write about it so well without actually having felt it in, yes. in his hand. So yes. I'm glad you reinforced my own, because, tell people a little bit about the Walker cult, because people have seen it in the movies. Right. They don't know about it, but tell us about what right. you discovered.
Well, it is one of those transitional inventions, and it was born out of a collaboration. Captain Sam Walker, who was a very famous Texas Ranger, died in the Mexican War in Mexico. He was in Florida, and the book gets into parts of this. He was actually in Florida during the Second Seminole War, and because during that campaign, he met a gentleman named Samuel Colt. Samuel Colt had come to Florida with a new patented weapon that he wanted to try to sell to the Army, which at that time was the 1836 model Patterson Colt. Well, Walker had used the Patterson Colt and liked it, but it was too weak of a weapon. It was a 36 caliber, and he felt it needed more stopping power. So after he moved to Texas and became part of the Ranger force out there, he contacted Samuel Colt and asked if he could come and talk to him about his weapon. And out of that developed the Walker Colt, which is named after Sam Walker. And it became a .44 caliber, a much more powerful weapon. In fact, it was probably the most powerful handgun up until the 20th century when they made the .44 Magnum. But the Walker Colt was for years the most powerful handgun that was made. And Samuel Walker, in collaboration with Samuel Colt, developed that weapon. And it became an iconic weapon in the Mexican War and in some of the Indian Wars as well.
And in cowboy movies.
Yeah. Well, a lot of times in the cowboy movies you see post-Civil War, after the Civil War, and they're into cartridge guns at that point, the peacemakers, things like that. But pre-Civil War, people have to remember that guns were loaded, the bullet was actually built inside the weapon, and that makes it very slow to load. You have to put in the powder, you put in the lead, you put in the char, the wads, and then you cram it all down into the cylinder, and then your weapon's loaded. Well, you do that in a six-cylinder weapon, that's about a half-hour job. So pre-Civil War, they used multiple guns, as you would see in some of the Clint Eastwood movies. You would use multiple cylinders. You would change cylinders out in the weapon, because you just did not take a cartridge out of the, and put a new cartridge in. You had to build the actual ammunition in the gun, and that is what the Walker Colt and all, and that's what a lot of the Civil War weapons were. And it's very labor intensive to use it.
Well, that's why when I said I love books where I learned something, mm-hmm. I didn't know these little details. Now they will always be with me, and I will know.
Now they're stuck in your head.
I had no idea that they boiled the cylinders.
Yeah. Black powder, what they used, was very corrosive, and they had to constantly clean their weapons to keep their weapons from fouling and corroding.
See, I don't remember ever seeing that in a cowboy movie, and I certainly never read it in a book before. So it's a detail like that. So when I got to that part, well, I'm not even going to talk about the first few pages are so exciting. Mm-hmm. The fight is mm-hmm. It's one of those opening few pages that just grip a reader, because once you read those, you can't. I'm sure many people have told you that once they start reading, they can't put it down, or they're reading late into the night. they can't stop reading.
I've had some reviewers tell me that they it's a page turner, and I think that's one of the that's something that an author loves to hear.
Oh,
I'm going to read it.
A great compliment, and mm-hmm. For me, I get so many books. And yes. I have so
yes,
much to do. But when I got this book and when I started those first few pages, I said, oh, this is so good. This is so good. And then we get to the part where he's boiling the cylinder, and I'm saying, nobody ever told me this before. This is the first. And I said, and I just thought, wow, this author has done exactly what an author should do. take me to a place I haven't been and make me really see it and really enjoy it. And I got such a kick out of one little scene like that. And there are lots of scenes in the book like that where you've done details that make the book so deep, so good.
Well, you have to be very careful, and I appreciate what you're saying, because at times I can possibly get too involved into the details, and people's eyes will glaze over. So I'm appreciative that you tell me that I haven't gone too far.
No, you've had exactly the right balance, because also your dialogue is very good. We have all of the details of things, but you have the nice flow of dialogue. Everybody likes Jesse, and of course he's quite he does a lot in this book.
There's a lot going on in his head.
Oh yeah, there is, and I think you've just created a wonderful, wonderful character, and I just wish you the best with this. You have so many things that you can do. I don't know. You have a web page?
I have a Facebook page, Jay Glover Author, and there's an Instagram page as well.
Okay, well, you have to be very active with the Facebook page. But, of course, the wonderful thing is you have so many photos that you can keep uploading all the time in Instagram of St. Mm-hmm. Augustine. You just have to, connect. Really, not just with all of the bookstores here. You should be here. Come to St. Petersburg. If you come here, Haslam's Bookstore is one place that you should come. They will do a signing for you. And if you come down here to this end of the state, you have to come to the studio. We'll do an interview here. And so we can talk more about this. But connect. People who come to Florida... Oh, and I know that Europeans will love this book. You really have to tap into the European audience, the visitors who come here. Contact the Visitors Bureau. You have a lot of work to do, but I think you can make a big success out of this book, a really big success. And I was just talking at the beginning of the hour of books that I would like. There are some books that I was a script writer, so I see books as films. When I like a book, I see it as a film. And this is another example of a book that I hope someone will pick up. Unless I win the lottery, I can't option it. But I hope somebody in Hollywood will pick it up eventually. But you have to get it seen. You have to get it read.
Right.
And you have enormous potential with this book.
Thank you. And anybody that you know out there in Hollywood, you could drop them a line.
Okay. Well, I will. And what's your next book going to be?
I'm going to go back in time about 20, 30 years to the Seminole War.
Okay. Well.
And it's going to be about the Native Americans in Florida and the longest and most expensive Indian War in U.S. history.
Wow. Okay, well, I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to you coming to this side of the state and doing some book signings and coming here to the studio. And it would be so much fun to talk to you more about this wonderful book. And it's available wherever books are sold, mostly on Amazon, because that's mostly where everything is sold, right? Absolutely. And I want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. I think you've done a terrific, terrific job.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, and I hope to see you here soon, okay?
Thank you.
Okay.
All right.
Bye-bye now. What an author. This is an example. Look, he was a business guy. He didn't write a book. I don't know how old he is, but he's not young. He's had a whole career. And then he decides to write, and he did the right thing, joining a critique group, a writing group, 5 years of working with a bunch of women. That must have been fun for him. They will give good advice, and wherever you are, there's a writing group near you. Just check it out. Go to the local libraries and find a writing group for you and start writing, because it is you know, that's the name of the game. You have to write. And as I said, I keep buying this lottery ticket in the hope that I can win so that I can then option up and then I can be a movie producer too, because I'm having so much fun here on Joy on Paper. I can't believe it's going to be 5 years. And for my anniversary program, which is on St. Patrick's Day, I'm so honored that Andrew Grant and his wife, Tasha Alexander, will be my special guests. They were on my anniversary program last year for the 4th anniversary. They're coming back for the 5th anniversary. It will be so wonderful to have both of them. Or maybe now I should say all three of them, because now I'm going to have Andrew Grant, Tasha Alexander, and Andrew Child. My goodness, because Andrew has split himself in two. He's wearing two hats, and he's not only going to be writing his wonderful Paul McGarth books, but he's also going to be working with his brother, Lee Child, to keep that Jack Reacher franchise going, because that's exciting. And now this is an example. Lee Child is going to be, they're going to be doing streaming video for all the Jack Reacher books. That should keep Lee Child very busy. And that's why I think, you know, now he could just call in his baby brother, because Lee Child was, is the older brother of Andrew Grant. And together, they will keep Jack Reacher going for another 20 years. And that's really exciting to think about. And it's going to be so exciting when the streaming video comes out. I don't know where they're going to find a 6'5" blonde, blue-eyed guy to play the real Jack Reacher, the Jack Reacher that Lee Child has always written about, because Lee Child is 6'5", blonde and blue-eyed, and so that's how he always imagined Jack Reacher. He never imagined himself looking like Tom Cruise, although Tom Cruise did a great job. So it's going to be quite a challenge to reintroduce a new Jack Reacher to everyone. But I'm sure the series will be great, because the book series is great. And so we can look forward to some really great streaming video coming in the next few years. But as always, it takes a little bit of time in Hollywood. And I'm just so thrilled they will be joining me here on Joy on Paper for the 5th anniversary. Meanwhile, you can go to my webpage, radio-joyonpaper.com, and listen to some of my interviews, read more about my upcoming program the entire month of March. I have many, many wonderful, wonderful guests coming. So make sure that you check it out. It's radio-joyonpaper.com. And meanwhile, remember what I always tell everyone. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're lucky, to hear the magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or a series on the Hallmark Channel. You never know, and you won't find out unless you start writing. For goodness sakes, get busy, a page a day. And meanwhile, say something nice to somebody, and I will say something to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed, for everything you do for me. I appreciate it. My goodness, it's going to be 5 years. I can't believe it. Okay, and he's saluting me, and I'm saluting him. Bye-bye, everybody. Bye.